Wait. I'm sorry. Stop. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. There's no reason to play that song here. You see, the way I figure it, if we're going to talk about Nazis, let's do it right. And I mean, I think what the world needs right now is a guy with a robotic arm who can't jump but can swing from the robotic arm to come and take care of our neo-Nazi problem. In other words, we need a bionic commando.
I used to love that video game.
It's a pretty good video game. But what a lot of people don't know about that video game is that it wasn't called Bionic Commando in Japan.
Oh.
It was called, let me see if I can remember this, Top Secret Resurrection of Hitler.
Wow.
Is what it was called.
Okay.
And if you look at the original ROM, which I'm not going to tell you to go download a ROM, you'll see that all of like the nationalist stuff, it's got like swastikas, and it's literally a video game about somebody resurrecting Hitler and then you having to go take over this new Nazi threat. And as a result, and so that's what you are. So it's like, given the situation that we're facing right now, it's kind of like the World War II and the Cold War, if I'm going to talk like the president, happened on the same day, because we have the threat of nuclear annihilation and the threat of ultra far light racialist nationalism. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, 844-753-742. My name is Sam, usually, and with me today is Josh. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
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 Under the circumstances.
Under the circumstances.
And Wes, how are you?
Hey, everything old is new again.
Yeah. I know people love retro stuff, but this is just going really, really too far. Really too far. Maybe you're a little bit angry that I'm joking about this, in which case I will apologize for joking about it, but this is a coping mechanism, I've often said. And I'm not making a joke at the expense of the victims of the people killed, or injured. This is just straight up coping. So let's just, there's the story everybody knows about. Hundreds of white nationalists descended upon Charlottesville, Virginia, in a Unite the Right rally to protest the removal of a Robert E. Lee statue from Emancipation Park, recently renamed from Lee Park. Clashes between the racists and counter-protesters turned violent, and one woman was killed when a car rammed into a group of counter-protesters, allegedly driven by a tiny-faced white nationalist from Ohio. I left tiny-faced in.
Deservedly so.
I literally did that as a joke. My original draft of this had hundreds of white nationalists with lawn furniture.
Hmm. And tiki torches.
Yeah, I was kind of bracketing it with insults in my cold read. I don't know. Did you think that was a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, you also mentioned it's kind of like a Dick Tracy kind of villain vibe going
on.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks a little bit like Babyface.
A teensy face.
I don't want to make fun of the way people look, but oh my God. I don't know. It's like that. It's you ever read The Preacher? I know it's a TV show now, but have you seen the comic book?
I have.
Okay, and the part where he takes over as sheriff of that town and the KKK shows up.
Mm.
It's been forward in my mind. It's been in my mind, and it's been playing its mimetic tricks on me. And so when they start showing pictures of this guy, just that the panel, you know what panel I'm talking about if you've read The Preacher, just started playing in my head, and I couldn't not. I didn't actually mean to leave that in. I'm serious. But,
Whoopsie.
So that's what we've been facing today. If you've been on the news, if you've been anywhere, we've got people doing the fascist salute, carrying torches around a statue of, somebody who detached themselves from the United States in order to defend the ownership of people.
Not just any torches, but tiki torches.
Tiki torches.
Tiki
which is,
torches.
Okay,
like,
yeah,
nothing more
weird.
American.
Well, yeah, they're mass-produced. so that's pretty
so
American.
They're pretty Chinese.
Yeah. Well, which is American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's a Polynesian thing?
To
make them look?
I don't know if it's Polynesian or faux Polynesian.
It's faux Polynesian, I
okay.
imagine.
Yeah, I don't know what the petroleum industry was like. So
all I know is that that area around the park is going to stink of citronella for a few days.
Well, then let's go hang. No, let's not go hang out there. I don't want to die. It's a terrible situation. We've got racists on the march again in this country, which is not something we've seen this actively in 30 plus years.
Oh, I'd say longer, really.
No, because you got Skokie.
You don't spend a lot of time in Idaho at all, do you?
On the march. The Idaho's where they live.
Well, Idaho's also where they march. I mean, granted, it's like 20 years ago, but I'm from Spokane, so we'd always see all the time where they'd actually shut down all the businesses in Coeur d'Alene because the white nationalists were marching.
Yeah, that's where they live. It's a little bit different. Mm. I mean, I go march on my lawn sometimes.
All around Lake Coeur d'Alene, I know that's kind of like an area I don't like to visit.
I'm not actually joking about that's where they live. That is literally where they live. Yeah. There's a lot of racist and
great water skiing too, I'm told.
Yeah, there's a reason Mark Furman moved there.
Mark Furman moved there?
Yeah.
Yeah, long time ago.
Wow. That's not telling.
I haven't heard from him in years, but yeah.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Actually, he's popped up a few times in the last few years.
So the situation is you've got in Charlottesville, you've got something on the order of 300 to 500 protesters. It's not that huge of a number. And that was one of the very, very tiny silver linings is that we're not seeing a march of thousands and we're not seeing, we're not seeing this mass mobilization. It really is. It's sub 1,000 numbers, and that's good. And then hundreds of thousands of thousands of counter protesters. So the idiots were out, were outnumbered 3-1 or something like that, which I'm gratified to see.
Question. Were they outgunned?
I don't know. I've not heard anything about gunfire.
I haven't either, but if there was any group that's going to be armed.
Right. I mean, I know there were probably people who were armed because you know how that is.
Yeah.
But we have heard people being beaten with sticks and bats. We have heard, obviously somebody attacked a crowd with a car. We've heard about fist fights. People are throwing those tiki torches. There was also a helicopter crash, which people aren't really talking about.
Yeah, but. The helicopter was monitoring the situation from the air, but, the officers, the two police officers that died, not directly related to what was happening.
Yeah.
The helicopter just fell out of the sky.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't tie that directly to this violence. It just adds to the conundrums.
This is our best word segment, which is supposed to be about presidential politics. And as a result, anytime there's a national tragedy, the president, it's the job of the president to come out and say something in order to, kind of calm fears and to give the idea that the situation is under control, the right people are being brought to the place, action is being taken, and that the nation has an opinion on this. And that's what the president is supposed to do. So if you guys will look to your show notes, you'll notice at somewhere near the top, I have collected 4 quotes from prominent politicians about the situation going on in Charlottesville. And I would like you to figure out which one is the commander in chief of the armed forces of the United States, is the head of the executive branch, is basically the guy in charge. Figure out which one is the president.
Sure.
All right. The first quote is, "The Nazis, the KKK, and white supremacists are repulsive and evil, and all of us have a moral obligation to speak out against the lies, bigotry, anti-Semitism, and hatred that they propagate." Now, that's the first one.
Okay.
All right. The second one is, any commentary on that one? That seems fairly presidential.
I like the way that sounds. Yeah. It doesn't fit into 140 characters, but I do kind of like the way it rolls.
Not all of these are tweets.
Mm.
Yeah.
But he does kind of speak in sound bites.
He does. Let's see. That's true.
Let's keep going.
I think it's too on the head.
Okay. You think it's too obvious?
Too obvious.
Okay. Mm. "The views fueling the spectacle in Charlottesville are repugnant. Let it only serve to unite Americans against this kind of vile bigotry."
Too many syllables.
Too many words? All right.
Yeah,
Yeah, and he didn't use the term bigly in it at
all. You see, I'm, you're kind of ruining the game here, because I want my whole editorial point here is that you're looking for the most presidential sounding.
Oh.
But you guys are totally screwing this up for me.
Oh, but no.
you're both fired.
The problem is presidential has been redefined so bigly.
Would you stop it with the bigly?
I will not.
Yes, you will.
It's the best.
It's the best words.
Oh, man. Tolerance has to overcome this kind of hatred. This kind of hatred that is grounded really in ignorance. Ignorance of our values and what it makes us unique and what makes us unique as Americans.
Okay, see, that is bordering on Trumpism right there. Repeats the same word twice.
Mm-hmm.
I could actually see Trump saying something like that.
Right. I can tell you that this quote was in a live interview. So the repeating is that's something that humans do when they're speaking versus when they're writing. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump. Not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time.
So I got to say that one can't be it, because I mean there's no way Donald Trump would talk about himself in the third person. So
really,
I'm gonna say that one's shenanigans.
Okay.
It's not.
I mean, he likes to be called the Donald. I believe he's called himself that many a time. So
that he has. Yeah.
Again, repeating speech.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're gonna go for that one?
I'm going for that one just because, you know, he's not actually
egregious. Throws me. It did. Yeah. But there's a lot of big words in all of these. So what are you going with then?
Well, if I'm going to go with the one that sounds the most presidential, defining presidential before 2016.
Yeah.
I would have to say number two.
All right. Well, okay.
I got to say that I'm a fan of number one.
All right. Well, what the first one, the Nazis, the KKK, and white supremacists are repulsive and evil, and all of us have a moral obligation to speak out against the lies, bigotry, anti-Semitism, and hatred that they propagate. That was Ted Cruz.
Wow.
Yeah, like that guy.
Yeah.
For once.
Yeah, the views fueling this spectacle in Charlottesville are repugnant. Let it only serve to unite Americans against this kind of vile bigotry. Paul Ryan. So these are two people who might be running for president in 2020. When Trump is in jail,
and they're no longer trying to get that base.
Yeah. Tolerance has to overcome this kind of hatred, that is grounded really in ignorance, of our values and what makes us unique as Americans. That's National Security Security Advisor H.R. McMaster.
Who is a general, isn't he?
Something like that. Yeah. He's actually in the Trump White House.
Yes.
And he's saying this. So we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time. That is the Shazbot president of the Shazbot United States, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
What's missing? What's missing in that statement, I ask you?
The word terrorists, blame, actually saying anything bad about this group of people that deserves our ridicule.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say what's missing. I'd say what's actually there, what's prevalent. It's on many sides, on many sides. I mean, it's both siderism. It's this whole David Brooks kind of both sides are equally responsible for what actions are happening.
Yeah, but that's absolutely it. And it's what surprises me about this statement is that people are surprised by it. We're talking about a White House that has Steve Bannon as a central advisor. This is his milk and cheese. This is where he makes his money. What were people expecting?
Yeah, I mean, it's his base. So he's not going to attack his base because that's the only thing propping him up in the polls right now. I mean, literally, he's the worst president ever, and he's achieved this goal in less than 6 months.
Well,
and it's just continuing.
Yeah, interestingly,
on.
I mean, his approval rating is what, 33%?
Yeah, 33%.
At best, yeah.
During a strong economy, that's a fair inversion. I mean, the economy is considered strong right now. Whatever.
If you don't consider things like the dollar,
right,
is weakening.
Well, there are people who make money when the dollar is weak, so some people consider that a good thing.
Yeah.
It's, well. But essentially, Trump's first statement condemning the violence in Charlottesville on all sides is being widely decried by politicians and lauded by white nationalists. Politicians on both sides of the aisle, including Republican Senators Orrin Hatch of Utah, Cory Gardner of Colorado, and Marco Rubio of Florida, called the president to identify the violence in Virginia as terrorism by white nationalists. Meanwhile, white nationalist blog Daily Stormer is praising the president for not singling out their groups, calling the statement really, really good. The Trump administration later tried to reframe the president's statement, specifically mentioning white supremacist neo-Nazis and all extremist groups.
Yeah, you're not off the hook on this one, Trump.
No, it's clearly not. Yeah, if you look out there, people don't most people don't realize that they tried to reframe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he is, when he talks about all sides, he is victim blaming here.
Yeah.
You know, apparently these people that got hit by a car, they had some blame in this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to play the what about game, but at this point, I think it is fairly, I think it's fair to at least mention Antifa or whatever, that they were there and, you know, blah, blah violence, but it's not the same thing. It's not, you know, to say that, oh, they're just as bad, or what I'm seeing on Facebook a lot right now, which is driving me absolutely nuts, is people just making direct equations between this and Black Lives Matter. Oh, it's like, oh, they're doing the same things and da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. No bones about it. If you're listening to this, if you are equating what happened this week in Charlottesville, Virginia, to the kind of stuff that Black Lives Matter does, you are racist. You are a bigot. Full stop. There's just no other way to put it. If you can't see the difference, if you can't understand the differences between these two groups of people, if you can't understand what drives one group and what drives another group, and if you can't see what Black Lives Matter is trying to do with demonstrations and what is trying to do, if you can't take in the context, if you can't understand what's going on, if you can't see murder as somehow worse than blocking traffic, you are a bigot. You are the problem. You may as well be down there with a torch.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry. I would like to put it other ways. I don't generally like to be that, believe it or not, I don't like to be that inflammatory.
I know that you would like to have us like disagree with you at times.
Right.
And challenge you and your ideas, but this is not the time.
I was expecting a little bit of pushback from you. I was.
Whoa. No, that's kind of painting me as the racist.
Oh. No. I was a little afraid that you were going to say I was taking it too far.
No, I'm sorry, but no, there is a difference between speeches. I mean, we're not going to David Rubin this. We're not going to sit down. If you know anything about David Rubin, he's notorious for this kind of argument. He's the both siderisms, and he always leans towards the more bigoted sides because it's his base.
I am really happy to say that all the people that I've seen saying this, they're on my friends' walls. I'm not friends with them, and they haven't liked Ask an Atheist. And I feel like that's a little bit of a badge of honor. But I wouldn't be surprised if there were people on my wall who thought that way. And I just don't, I literally don't understand it.
Hmm. On my wall, the thing I've seen recently is people equating Antifa to communists.
Well, I could make that, a lot of them are Marxists.
Marxist.
Speaking as a Marxist, I feel pretty comfortable saying that.
Socialist, not communist.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay, maybe a lapsed Marxist. I don't know. I've kind of evolved from there.
Given that Nazis are counter-communists,
right?
And I'm not surprised that the counter-communists, I mean, counter-Nazis would be confused as communists.
Right. I mean, there are parallels that can be drawn here between, you know, the three major players in, you know, in the Europe part of World War II, there are these three particular major players, the US, Germany, and the Soviet Union. It, like, the stuff that Antifa says sounds a lot like, and very similar to the anti-fascist rhetoric of, or, you know, the first half of the 20th century in the Soviet Union. Hmm. You can make you can make a comparison, but to say, but to make a direct equivalency that X equals Y, I don't think that's necessarily accurate.
Yeah, I would agree.
What I don't understand about these people, is just like they make a big deal about how they're Americans and blood and soil, which
patriots,
patriots and whatever. But I mean, don't we make video, like, isn't like the American view of itself basically murdering a Nazi?
Yeah, Nazis they're our bad guy for every franchise ever.
Right.
I mean, like
if we were going to make a statue of America, not like the Statue of Liberty, which is an aspirational statue of America, but a accurate statue of America, it would be a guy of about my proportions,
yes,
eating McDonald's with a gun and stabbing a Nazi. I mean, that's our view of ourselves.
We're talking about Captain America's first cover, punching Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 7 years of using Nazis as our punching bags. I mean, it's nice to actually have Nazis to punch.
They're big in the they're big in the Confederacy, and they're big into this Nazi thing. They just really like the losers. I don't know what. I mean, I get it. Americans love the underdog, but much like nostalgia, this is taking it too far.
Yeah.
Well, these same people are also saying, you know, hey, Putin's not that bad. There's a lot of people on the right that are like,
he's become the alpha white Christian prototype.
Right. Well, this isn't new either. If you look at the way oligarchy and fascism generally get along pretty well, as far as that goes. So I'm not surprised by that at all. Especially given how much, you know, Trump loves this Putin guy.
It's so much to the point, like, he still doesn't, he will not denounce him. Putin's the only person that's still never under fire by Trump. Even when Trump was forced to sign the sanctions, there was no way that he could not sign something so popular.
He got more angry at Arnold Schwarzenegger than he did at a guy who was positively responsible for affecting the U.S. election in 2016. That's just it. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We'll be back in a bit.
Has N'Gadwe We Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster N'Gadwe We Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an N'Gadwe We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
48 hours, 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is, it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEX Radio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Now, there's something that there's a little trick that I pulled that I don't know if anybody noticed, but I mentioned a lot of politicians and their responses to the violence and the stupidity going on in Charlotte by racists and bigots. And every politician I named was a Republican. And is a nominal supporter of our current president. I did that intentionally. There are certain things in this world that we encounter, we need to at least temporarily put aside some of our fights or our other arguments and direct this. And the rise of fascism and racism in the United States, and the rise of fascism and the continuance of racism in the United States is something, that a lot of, you know, that has some pull with people on both sides of the aisle. Now, you've got your counter arguments there, of course, including the president. But that, I think that's important. And so every person I mentioned in the last segment, I strongly dislike. Orrin Hatch is kind of terrible. Marco Rubio, he's all right. Nobody likes Ted Cruz. Like, Ted Cruz may be the least liked human being on Earth, as far as I know. Anybody worse gets out of it by not being as well known. and I think that's important. That's important to me. These are all people I don't like, but, you know, in the break you said broken clock, Josh. But I think it's a little bit more than that. I mean, we don't like Nazis in America. No. We just don't.
There's a reason why we have that 7-year history.
Yeah. And we've got some quotes. And so the reason I'm mentioning that now is because now I'm going to start talking about what other people have said. I'm focusing on the political aspects of this more than the violence and all that stuff, just because this is what I know how to do. You know?
Work with what you're good at.
Yeah.
All right.
Charlottesville Mayor Michael Singer, Democrat, wrote, "I'm not going to make any bones about it. I place the blame for a lot of what you're seeing in America today right at the doorstep of the White House and the people around the president."
No debate there.
Okay.
This is kind of right up Bannon's wheelhouse. I mean,
Bannon, Steve Miller, not of the Steve Miller band.
Yeah.
Sebastian Gorka.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, yeah, it's completely surrounded by people that support this. I mean,
I really don't like the sense of making the sense that Donald Trump invented these people.
Oh, no.
Or
no.
That Donald Trump even radicalized them. These folks have been around for a very long time. I mean, I've been following their exploits. A lot of the people you're seeing, a lot of what you're seeing today, I would say, had its genesis during the Clinton administration. And the rise of or at least the media rise of racism with a kinder face that you saw in the 90s, you know, politically correct racism or whatever. If you want an example of that, I think I've mentioned this before on YouTube. There was a video of Christopher Hitchens on, I almost said peace be upon him, he'd laugh, on C-SPAN as a talk show host with a guy who runs some racist newspaper. And the audio was really terrible. So I downloaded the video, cleaned up the audio, and reposted with a link to the original.
Okay.
And you know, that I think what was going on there kind of led directly to this. Now, what Trump did was create the opening that they've been looking for.
He helped normalize it to me.
I don't think normalizing is accurate. I mean, so many people are saying this isn't normal.
It's not normal, but, you know, between his all of his speeches that he would be given around the state saying, you know, get him out of here, or build the wall. I mean,
But how is that normalizing, I guess, is the question.
It made it more acceptable. It makes it more acceptable to the people that are the fence sitters that are usually the deciders of an election.
You see, that's a good argument, I don't think that's the same as normalizing it. We're not, I mean, the press isn't accepting this behavior. The public isn't accepting this behavior. It's not normal.
It's not normal, but he made it okay for people, in my mind, he made it okay for people to speak out and say the things, the hateful things that have been in their mind, that all this political correctness, that's bad, every equality is bad, women's rights, who needs them? And just all that stuff that's been building up.
I might say that it's not that they felt confident to speak out. I think it's that they got more press attention. I think the fact that Trump directly pandered to these people, it didn't normalize them. It didn't bring out the stragglers. I think it provided a platform.
It just empowered them.
Yeah, it gave him a platform that they didn't have otherwise.
Okay, well,
which is bad enough. I mean, I'm not trying to undersell this. I'm trying to analyze it so that I know how to explode it.
If Trump promoted it, put a focus onto it, then people aimed microphones at it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, and I don't think that's the same thing as normalizing. Now, that's not to say that racism racism wasn't bad until Trump. I mean,
no, definitely not.
That's the argument I want to say that this is unique, this is new, this is an event, it needs to be talked about, but just because we're talking about racists now doesn't mean that there weren't racists before, that racism wasn't a problem before they went to Charlottesville.
This is not a problem that just started in the last year and a half before the election cycle.
Yeah, it's difficult for me. Like I said, I'm focusing on the things that I know, which is politics. So Cory Gardner, the senator from Colorado, said, "Mr. President, we must call evil by its name. These were white supremacists, and this was domestic terrorism." Senator Orrin Hatch said, "We should call evil by its name. My brother didn't give his life fighting Hitler for Nazi ideals to go unchallenged here at home." Former President Bill Clinton, "Even as we protect free speech and assembly, we must condemn hatred, violence, and white supremacy." And on the Daily Stormer, Trump's comments were good. He didn't attack us. He just said the nation should come together. Nothing specific against us. No condemnation at all. When asked to condemn, he just walked out of the room. Really, really good. God bless him.
It's just no words. I mean,
Trump gave a pathetic speech that was about 45 seconds long.
Yeah.
It was the most mealy-mouthed little wishy-washy thing that I've ever heard, where he victim blames everybody.
Yeah.
And then he walks out as reporters ask him questions.
Yeah.
He had a chance to say anything like Orrin Hatch or the mayor, and he didn't. He took it. He had his shot, completely blew it.
Yeah.
And just like Josh has said, this is his base. Why would he denounce them?
He had tea time to make. I mean, come on. I mean, really, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Like, we were interrupting his vacation.
So do you guys think there's an atheist, like, I haven't even tried to make this particular story about atheism. Like, I haven't made the atheist connection here, which is something I even try to do with most political stories. But this time I didn't, just because I don't really need to. I think this is, if you're an atheist in the United States, or you care about atheists in the United States, this is something that you should pay attention to, regardless of its connection to atheism directly.
If you care about people, this is something you should care about.
Maybe I should say this speaks more to the humanist in me. I don't know. Do you guys see an atheist connection here?
I see a religious angle.
How's that?
A lot of the alt-right people are either Christian, or some of the actual Nazi people are, trying to go to more pagan Norse religions.
Oh, yeah. Like my favorite guy.
Yeah.
What is his name?
Richard Spencer?
No. Huh? Augustus Sol Invictus.
Oh, yes.
That is glorious.
What a beautiful little treasure he is. He's great. He's got a wonderful little unconquered son name going on there. He's got, he's so the libertarians hate him, so he re-registered as a Republican.
Sacrifices goats.
He's into Thelema, which is that Aleister Crowley stuff. He's a member of the OTO. It's like, wow, you're Like, you are precisely the kind of person that I would research to death because you are utterly hilarious. But you name yourself Augustus Sol Invictus, and you sacrifice a goat to white supremacy or whatever. I couldn't corroborate the sacrificing a goat thing, but I completely believe it. I will let it be in my head canon until told otherwise.
Sure.
And then I will completely denounce it. When you're that kind of guy, how do you take yourself seriously?
I mean, you can say mental illness or you just self-aggrandizement. I mean, comes in all kinds of forms. I mean,
but it's like, I mean, I do this and I don't take myself that seriously. What should I change my name into? Napoleon Fire Dude?
Well, Max Powers is taken by Homer, so.
I don't know. I think that guy's... I want to say brilliant, but I think people might misconstrue. Once upon a time, I might have called him a snowflake, but that's now taken on a new color that I don't necessarily intend.
He's a special flower.
Yeah, yeah, but oh my god! I mean, look at him. He looks like he's in his political photo for like, please vote for me for. It looks like he's running for class president. I'm like, you are so.
He should be in an ad for J. Crew.
You are so cute. You're like a stuffed Hitler. It's cute. It's. I don't know how to explain it because he makes me sad, but it's.
Kind of, I mean, he does look a lot like the Richard Spencer crowd, so I mean.
Well, yeah, because he's got he's got that new wave haircut going on a little bit.
Well, the old wave, the Germany 1940s haircut.
Yeah, I'm really into Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
Haircut.
Oh.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Actually, most of you probably have no idea who Kraftwerk is.
I like Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually my brother-in-law does electronic music and didn't know much about Kraftwerk. So the first thing I did was went out and got an LP, a vinyl of Autobahn, and sent it to him.
It should be Kraftwerk and Tubular Bells.
I'm not that big on Tubular Bells.
Really?
I don't like horror movies.
So. I mean, that's like the two early.
All right. So shall we move on to one existential horror to another existential horror visited upon us by our commander-in-chief?
Yes, please.
Okay.
All right.
Donald Trump warned this week that any threats on the U.S. made by North Korea would be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. Representatives in Pyongyang then responded that the insular nation was carefully examining the operational plan for making an enveloping fire in the areas around Guam. Trump had a press conference stating that North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un has disrespected our country greatly, and let's see what he does with Guam. Trump warned that if something happens to Guam, it would be an event the likes of which nobody's seen before. Trump declined to specify what would happen and denied that he was daring North Korea to do anything, saying it's not a dare, it's a statement of fact, and that North Korea was not going to threaten the U.S., Japan, or South Korea.
Right. First of all, I've watched a Michael Bay movie. The world has definitely seen fire and fury like this before.
Okay.
This is definitely, this is a bad threat also, considering that we're a country that dropped two nukes in World War II.
Yeah.
And so to say that opens up all kinds of...
Wow. You see, I just sort of assumed that he didn't understand history and was just being... And was... Okay.
He still doesn't understand history.
You know what? I thought, wow. Like, I listened to that, and I listened to that live in the car with Becky, because we were tracking down a pirate. No joke.
Yeah.
And I go, wow, that was a mighty fine wrestling promo. He's returning to form. He knows how to do a wrestling promo. He's doing a wrestling promo and he's in his New Jersey golf compound.
He's not returning to form. This has just been his form this entire time. He's never left the pro wrestling.
Yes,
form.
He has. Come on.
Well, Kim is the new heel.
Yeah, Kim. Yeah. Well,
he's trying to make him into.
To make him. I don't know how it's working out. Which is weird when you can't look good compared to a guy who starves his entire country. Yeah. So that was my first response. And my second response was, well, we're going to war.
I mean, if you, okay, so calling back to the Stormfront website, they actually, I haven't validated this outside of that website, but they were claiming that this actions with North Korea has bumped up his ratings by 6%, which if that were true,
I can't chapter and verse you, but that's right. That's not true, especially in Guam. Because he called the governor, I don't know, because it's not a state, but the governor guy in Guam, and he said basically that this would help Guam's tourism somehow.
Oh yeah, like by 10, yeah, like a factor of 10. It's, yeah, just insane. It's, but
maybe 100,000 years from now, when the radiation has finally cleared away, and you can put in a memorial, I guess. Maybe. I don't know what he's like. I literally don't know what he's thinking here. And you make a good point. I assumed he was just ignorant of history. Maybe he's not, and he's actually saying he's going to nuke the hell out of North Korea, and that's more terrifying.
Yeah, that's. I really hope that's not what he intended. I think it's just him blustering. I hope he's just blustering, because the rest of the world will hate us forever for this. And
yes. I don't know about this. I don't like this at all.
Yeah, I got a feeling he's not really joking, though.
I don't know.
I think he believes his words. Whether or not he would actually take action is a different issue.
That's the thing, is I don't know how serious he is about taking action on this kind of stuff, because that's been his usual main, is that he talks a big game, and then doesn't, and then basically just sort of waves his hands, expecting the little people to come in and actually make it happen for him.
Yeah,
much like his tweet about the transgender.
Yeah,
like literally just expected that to become a policy just because he tweeted.
Because he tweeted it. Yeah, it's like, okay, you guys figure it out, make it happen.
Military's like, uh-uh.
Right. They just basically said no, make it an order.
But with North
chain of command. Yep.
With North Korea, even if nukes aren't dropped, any kind of military action will be bad, because that will put us at arms with China.
Well, I mean, not only are you going to have basically some kind of conflict with China that could
actually turn into a real war.
That could turn into an actual war. And if you decide to go like real nuclear, if you actually decide to use, you know, limited nuclear exchange on a tiny nation like that, how's that not going to spread around everywhere?
Oh yeah, no,
no such thing as limited nuclear war.
Well, there is.
Like you said, it spreads.
There was when there was only one nation with nukes,
right?
But beyond that, no.
Okay.
If we get into a nuke shooting war, if one launches, many will launch.
Limited nuclear exchange is a word, is a phrase that actually means a thing. Maybe you don't want it to exist. But there is a difference between throwing around 5 nukes versus throwing around 500.
I agree.
Okay.
But if we have a limited, if we throw 5 nukes or even just one at North Korea, I think others will launch from other countries.
But I feel like you're murdering nuance here, and I don't like it when nuance is murdered. I'll just, you know, it's like there is a difference here. It'd be terrible. It would be absolutely a disaster.
Terrible, devastating for North Korea, South Korea,
right?
Every little country that's over there. There's tons of small countries. That's a tightly packed area.
A bunch of limited in land area, but population dense nations.
Yes.
And that's that. And you would be the ecological disaster could very easily lead to a famine, and that would be bad.
Yeah. And radiation will spread, especially since the currents like to come our way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the Cascadia would kind of...
I'm thinking of the...
Oh, you're visualizing, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, basically, we'd be irradiating ourselves at some point.
All right, we got to stop talking about Trump. I have one more story. Donald Trump is slated to name Kansas Governor Sam Brown back to the position of Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. According to the State Department website, the Office of International Religious Freedom's mission is to promote religious freedom as a core objective of U.S. foreign policy and to monitor religious persecution and discrimination worldwide. The office releases the report on international religious freedom annually and offers testimony to Congress and the Senate about the state of religious affairs abroad. Braunbach tweeted from his official governor account that religious freedom is the first freedom, the choice of what you do with your own soul, and that he was honored to serve such an important cause. Braunbach is both deeply religious and deeply unpopular in Kansas, with his state's economy floundering after having attempted to create a red state model for the nation with massive tax cuts.
Right. So first, we should say this again. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom.
Yeah.
This was actually created by Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Once upon a time, religious freedom actually did what it said on the tin.
Right. It wasn't designated just towards one religion.
Yeah.
Now it's the...
Yeah. Now they emptied up the can and filled it with freedom. A big heap of Jesus.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be a glass half full on this, and this could mean that it's no longer Governor Braunbach.
Yeah, I guess that would be pretty good for Kansas in that case. And this is me just baldly, you know, aligning with my political beliefs, is that this red state model is a clear failure. I mean, actually, not even my political beliefs. The numbers are in. They crunched them. This red state model fell apart really bad.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting over a revolt by his own party.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, he's now got a parachute out of a bad job he did.
Yeah. And I mean, I did kind of consider this a wash because, like, as far as the red versus blue debate, because, I mean, it's Kansas. They're probably going to pick another Republican. But... maybe not somebody as asinine as Braunbach.
And even the Republicans, the Senate in Kansas has been, like, combating what he's been trying to put into policy for the last year-ish or so.
Yeah.
So good on them for that. So I think they learned their lesson a bit, perhaps. They might actually pull back.
That would be nice. That would
at least for their schools?
Yeah.
I'm hopeful.
Goodness.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'm going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about not the president.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn.
And we want to ask you an important question. Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And I just discovered something actually very interesting about this room. Apparently, all three of us owned an Atari Jaguar.
Woohoo! I didn't own one.
Oh, you
I
didn't?
Just played it.
Oh, okay.
It
is,
you know, unfortunately, poor. And
because I'll claim it. I loved it.
Because that's weird. Because nobody bought an Atari Jaguar. I got mine for $20 at KB Toys when I was like 19.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I bought mine when it was almost new.
Yeah. Everybody hated it. I mean, the controllers were just obnoxious.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a precursor to what, the Xbox controller?
Yeah.
Just like big, worse. Massive.
I mean, right in the middle, it had like that 12 button little pressy pad with the little slip in.
Yeah,
covers.
But the action buttons on the controller part, the A, B, and C, were just dead. Like, they just thunk. And bling, bling. And it was like, no, it's terrible.
It was like a mechanical keyboard. There was like solid action.
It was nothing like a mechanical keyboard.
Really?
It was a soggy mess.
I remember mine working very well.
And you are right. The Atari Jaguar had dual 32-bit chips for standard game processing. But I think the graphical management system did actually have a 64-bit data bus. So that's how they got away with 64-bit. Much like the TurboGrafx-16, which you were also talking about, because
that too.
Yeah, because it was really an 8-bit chip with some 16-bit stuff glued to it.
Yeah,
and yeah,
they were definitely hacks in the day, but they were glorious.
Is the TurboGrafx, is that a Z80? I think it's NEC dyed Z80. I think is what it was.
PC Engine TurboGrafx. Yeah.
Remember way back when I said I replaced, like, I don't know anything about cars because where all my car knowledge is, it's a exhaustive list of exhaustive technical descriptions of early video game systems. I'm really not kidding. name a system.
Well, I would go with ColecoVision.
ColecoVision. I think that was a 6502 model. I don't know much about it. I was never a Coleco guy. Wait, no, it was something a little bit more than that. Oh God, I knew this. I'd have to look it up. Name
that
another one.
Fun. Atari 7800.
Atari 7800 was 6502.
Really? Wow. 56?
Ah, man, I have to look. I thought you were going to do something like Fairchild Channel F or try to really get me out in a weird way.
No, my really early gaming was either Atari 2600 or my buddy's Amiga,
which is 6507. It's a cut down 6502. Oh. Yeah.
Gaming on the Amiga. Oh, that was
68,000. 68,000, 68020, 68030. You could get booster cards to run a 68040 and a 68060.
So,
and then eventually power
like
PCs.
Math codes?
Yeah, but you pull the CPU completely.
Wow.
Yeah, basically change the brains out. I have a Turbo Express, actually.
Yeah, I've seen it around.
Yeah, I need to get it recapped. So if you know anything about recapping a Turbo Express, please contact me. I don't know.
Those handholds were glorious, man.
We have an email.
Oh.
Yeah, this is Katie from the internet, who writes, "Nonsense! If there is God, then where did life started? There would be no creation if there hasn't been a creator. Okay, if you are saying that everything has its scientific explanation, then tell me, where did science come from? You might say it's the knowledge and the intellect of a human that explains every natural phenomenon. Then where did the intellect of the human came from? Can science explain why among all 8 planets, we are only given one planet to call our home and live life? We can live in some other planet, but only the Earth was given a human the privilege to live in it, with enough oxygen, water, enough sunlight, enough food and water that other planets don't contain." Oh, apparently this is a webpage comment.
Ah, right. So, first of all, I mean, she's kind of dissing on science, and then she takes the very recent science view that there is only 8 planets. She is a Pluto denier.
So are you a Pluto supporter?
I miss it, but it's small and it's, you know, kind of weird and out there and doesn't have an actual, like, good rotation around the sun.
So, yeah.
I'm fine with that, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
How about you?
Yeah, no, Pluto does not. I mean, the argument is it's way too far out there, and also it can't clear its own path in the meteor or cloud. I believe is what's called. Somebody's going to hate me for that. But also,
it's the Oort cloud.
Yeah, the Oort cloud.
Yeah.
And then
you're right.
It doesn't clear its own path. It's too small.
Neither does Neptune. So they made an exception for Neptune.
Well, no, there's a whole bunch of other things. it's too small to, because if you actually consider that a planet, there's actually more objects out there that would actually be constituted a planet because they're the same size.
I'll be honest with you. I don't really, like, honestly, I'm okay with there being 8 planets. I was okay with there being 9 planets. Yeah. The way it was done really kind of annoyed me. It's like, well, we can't have a system with 153 planets. Why not?
Sure.
I mean, why don't we make the solar system a little bit more interesting? I mean, if you're really going to be honest about what's in the solar system, you mentioned the sun, you mentioned Jupiter, maybe you mentioned Saturn. There are really only 2 planets in the solar system. It's just the 2. Everything else is just weird asteroids that maybe sometimes get together.
But still, bringing it back, Katie, you know, 8 planets. Okay, fine.
Oh, right. There's an email.
Oh, yeah. So, you have 8 planets, and only the Earth is habitable, and it's made for us. But Katie, like, over 80% of the Earth we can't survive on. I mean, most of this, we have to adapt the Earth to us to be able to live in many of these places. So,
and it wasn't, yeah, I mean, it wasn't very good for, I mean, agriculture had to happen.
We can't swim 24/7 in the water.
Yeah.
We can't live in Antarctica. We can't generally live in the deserts.
Before technology, there was only a few percentage points of land on Earth in which it was fit for us to live. So this planet really, I mean, if this planet was fine-tuned for us, it wasn't done a very good job.
No, that engine is backfiring and spittering and sputtering, and it's bad.
And so back to our topic about science, the scientific explanation itself. I mean, basically, science is a methodology to determine reality.
Right.
It's a rule set. It's not that the out product. The product that comes out of it is technology or the application of that knowledge. You use this methodology to try and eliminate the bad ideas and try to refine your good ideas to develop a good scientific explanation.
This is popularly explained as science is a verb. And it's like she's talking out like, well, you know, if there's all this science buried in the ground, you know, there's a big bag of science over there. Who do you think put it there? God put it there. Or at least I assume she's thinking that God put a bag of science in the ground. I'll be honest with you. I just cold read it, which means I was more paying attention to speaking than I was reading.
Yeah.
But she is making a creationist argument? I guess that's my first question.
It's hard to tell because her. I mean, I'm not going to harp on her grammar too bad.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to be a grammar Nazi.
Okay.
But
it's a bad time to be any kind of Nazi right now.
Oh. But it's the good kind of Nazi to be. But anyway, it comes down to the fact, like, I mean, so the way that she framed the entire argument, sometimes it sounds like she's on one side or the other.
Yeah.
It's really hard to actually get a good read on what she's trying to say because it's just very, very badly phrased.
Yeah.
But that aside, I mean, what we can decipher out of that, we can say that kudos on understanding that under the current understanding, it's 8 planets.
Mm-hmm.
And science is a methodology. It's how we come up with explanations.
Right.
It's not the explanation itself, and it's not the final.
Yeah, okay, it is a creationist argument. You might say it's the knowledge of the intellect of a human that explains every natural phenomenon. Then where did the intellect of the human come from? Well, we have an answer for that, it's natural selection. It's what we call evolution.
Yeah, I'm not going to go through and say God did it.
Yeah, these skills that we have as humans developed over time in response to environmental pressures. And it just so happens that these skills that we've developed to respond to our environment have usefulness in other areas, like determining how the universe is structured and how it works.
And how to make it work to our benefit.
Right.
With Katie's argument, though, if God did it, then, you know, you have to ask that question. How did God do it? Where did God come from?
Yeah.
You know, who created God?
All of these, if this didn't, you know, where did this come from? Clearly, that means God did it. This always ends up in celestial recursion, which is then you have to explain why God exists. And they do that by turning the lights off, putting a flashlight under to their face and going, ooh, he's eternal. Ooh.
Mysterious ways and all.
Yeah. And that's
a bunch of hand.
That's a non-explanation. Yeah. In the response is that if that's so, if he's why is that uncreated, but this can't be uncreated? in the full definition of created, you know, and creature and whatever. Mm. And it's just, yeah, it's this weird celestial recursion that is really, really hard for people to get. It's like if you look up recursion on Google. Have you ever done that?
No.
Programmers love recursion jokes. We do. And so,
is it like dividing by zero?
If you, it's a little bit. It's like if you go on Google and you type do a barrel roll that spins around, you've done that. Yeah. but if you type in recursion into Google, it says, did you mean recursion? that is the nature of this argument. And that will always be the nature of this argument. And
you know what's fun? Ask Google to make you a sandwich.
No.
That is a hilarious joke. I'm doing it right now. it's just an endless loop of recursion.
So, RNSB from the internet wrote with a correction. In a previous episode, Becky mentioned the owner of Hobby Lobby, who's planning to build a Bible museum in D.C. She criticized him for building it close to the mall where the Smithsonian museums are, so that the Bible museum would stealthily blend in. As much as I hate to defend him, I must. I live in suburban Maryland, and downtown D.C. is, among other things, the museum district. A lot of the Smithsonian museums are in that area, along the mall and off of it. But there are other museums around there as well, including the Newseum, the Spy Museum, both private museums that charge admission, and the Holocaust Museum, which sells tickets during the busy season. So I don't think there's anything underhanded in opening a museum there. That's just where the museum-going families are in the summer.
So I don't understand. So he's defending it. He's defending this museum just because it's a commercial enterprise, just like these other three museums that he mentions.
Well, this is America. He's allowed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But that's not the argument. I mean, the argument is, I mean, it's basically, so the Newseum, which is for interactive broadcasting for kids, like to give them an experience with the previous broadcasts. It's kind of a cool setup. The Spy Museum is basically geared towards different spy tech throughout the era and some stories about incursions that were that were good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about the third one that was mentioned, but
The Holocaust Museum.
Yeah. That one is definitely, I mean, that's a remembrance for something terrible that happened, even though as many people that try and claim it didn't happen.
Right.
The Bible Museum I don't think it belongs there. I mean, yeah, sure, it's a commercial enterprise, but it doesn't deserve any kind of legitimacy other than...
Those first ones that you mentioned are all evidence-based.
Yeah.
We're just talking about a museum.
I think his point is solid, that this is that if you're going to build a museum in Washington, D.C., this is where you're going to put it. But I also think that you've got and so that's fine. I do think there is cause for concern that he's trying to add government, you know, a sense of government legitimacy to this museum by putting it there. Why doesn't he put it in Cincinnati? Why doesn't he put it in Philadelphia? Why doesn't he put it in New York? He's putting it in D.C. because that's the capital.
Yeah, Kentucky.
There's good reasons for not putting it in Kentucky. That's a fairly saturated market.
yeah, even more so now that the wheels are coming off that boat.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fairly saturated market. It might flood. It's a shame they don't have anywhere to go if it does flood. Yeah, anyway.
It's too bad they don't have a large boat.
But it's a cause for concern. But it's not actionable.
Yeah, it's not actionable.
I just got to sit here and kind of take it, I guess.
It doesn't matter where it goes. It would give me an icky feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
So if it's there, I guess, whatever.
But they have to return all of their merchandise. So, I mean, there's not going to be anything for them to have. So, I mean, it's going to be an empty building.
Eventually. So I've got some news to discuss. A lot of things. The first thing is, Wes is here. Meredith was also supposed to be here today, but she's not feeling well.
This is true.
But I have asked Wes and Meredith to help produce the show.
Hooray!
So, yeah.
I humbly accepted.
Yeah, and they've been...
Meredith was happy to.
Yeah, they've been... I really like working with Meredith. She surprises you with the stuff that she digs up. Yeah. So it's, you know, I mean, I'm still going to be hosting a lot of the time,
but
it's a four-part deal instead of just a two-part, just, you know, me and Becky trying to run it all. So
Sweet.
There's that.
Yeah, I should say that a lot of my I have a lot of free time on my hands now, so I'm happy to be here.
Cool. Part two is kind of an exciting announcement. I've recently been chosen as chief engineer for Radio Tacoma, otherwise known as KTAH 101.9 FM.
Sweet.
So, you know, it's something I've wanted to do since I was eight. And I'm really looking forward to it. And chances are you're going to see Ask an Atheist on that show or on that station. So we'll be back on the air. That is going to mean some changes because KTAH is a non-commercial station. So I can't air commercials. So we're going to have to, you know, maybe I can still put them on the podcast. I'm still going through that. But I'm focused on, we have to get, the station transmitting by November, 'cause that's when our construction permit ends. And, they managed to get a folded dipole antenna and, you know, so they've got an antenna up already, which is usually the biggest hurdle, but there's
it's a good setup.
Yeah, it's a decent setup. I was there today. Which is, if you follow my, my Facebook feed, why I was asking if anybody wanted to come to church with me, as it happens, the transmitter site is at the local Quakers, which is interesting to me. And, you know, this is one of those situations where I'm going to work with religious people on this one. I did try to start a humanist radio station. I failed in that task. But I believe in community media. We got our start in community media, and that means working with a lot of people. But I will tell you that it is well known among the Radio Tacoma people that I'm an atheist activist, and they are okay with that, and they are comfortable.
And so, they're talking about putting your show on their air.
Yeah. Yeah. So in fact,
they obviously must be pretty darn okay with you.
You're going to be hearing a lot of me on that station, possibly in the beginning, because we need to spin up with content. And just so happens that I have 300 plus, back episodes that I could possibly air. And then the third one is a bit personal. But in 2013, I wrote an article, about depression. And a lot of people responded to me about it, and I promised in that article that I would be more public about it than I am. And the thing is, I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a performer a little bit. My whole family are musicians, stand up comedians, things like that. And so I have the performer gene, and a performer by necessity has to mask their emotions when they're feeling bad in order to put on a good show. And so that often requires that I don't talk about how I'm feeling. And the fact of the matter is I'm feeling quite bad. I think I may have mentioned in passing that the house that Becky and I were working on fell through for familial reasons. And that took a big toll on me, a much larger toll than I realized. And and just my general malaise over the last couple of years, failures and a few other projects, which I haven't really mentioned on the show, and a lot of other stuff, I'm not okay. I'm actually quite far from okay. And I, I'm treating my friends badly. I'm doing stuff that I thought I put behind me when I was a teenager, and it's all coming back now. And I feel like I'm losing control. And, I don't feel like I'm losing control. I feel like I've lost control. And as a result, I'm going on a break. And this is the last time you're going to be hearing me for maybe a month, maybe two. I'm going to do a fairly crazy thing. I'm angry and I'm sad, and so I'm pulling a Transmetropolitan and going up the mountain. And I'm going to be spending a lot of time up the mountain. And then when I get back, I'm going to throw myself into getting this radio station on the air. Because if there's one thing I've learned, I'm happiest when I have something to do, and I'm happiest when I have a point. And Radio Tacoma is that. You know, it's there are people who have stories they want to tell who aren't being given an opportunity to tell them. And so I want to be, you know, for me, as far as I'm concerned, this title of chief engineer is aspirational. I don't know that I'm up to it yet. I don't know that I'm equal to the task. And I think part of the reason that I'm afraid that I'm not equal to the task is just how much of a mess I am emotionally right now. So I'm going to get my house in gear. And honestly, I think getting my house in gear necessitates a break from Ask an Atheist. I don't want it to go. I'm not ending. I'm clearly not ending the show. I see a big future for the show. It's actually kind of funny. I feel like the show has been in a little bit of a rut. And I think it's been in a rut because it's been a reflection of how I am. I've been in a rut. And so I thought a solution to that was to add more voices in the way Ask an Atheist is prosecuted on a day-to-day basis. And my solution to that was to bring Wes and Meredith in, which was a fairly easy decision to make once your schedule cleared up. You know, the less said there, the better. We're all friends. And then the very next day I went to a Radio Tacoma meeting and, I asked two questions, one, which was what kind of antenna they had and what was the model of transmitter that they had. And they immediately asked me to be on the board because apparently they didn't have any on the board who even knew what that stuff was. So it's not like there were a lot of candidates for the job and they chose the most talented one. I'm just the one who knows what the words mean. And, but that was just such a great opportunity. I've wanted to work on a radio station for as long as I can remember. My dad had a boombox, and the first thing I did with it was record a talk show when I was five. And that tape is around here somewhere. He called it the Sam Mulvey Experience. And I want to be ready for it, and I want to be good for it, and I want to do better on Ask an Atheist. And as a result, I think I need to stop performing and focus on myself. And I think that necessitates a break not only from the show, but from my routine. And that's why I'm going up the mountain. And that's about as personal as I've been in some time. But I think it needs being said. I promised that I would talk about this. And I have not made good on that promise. I've been keeping it to myself. And if you are one of my friends, no, you are not the reason. No, it's been an aggregate of everything. Questions, comments, concerns, anything else before breaking up?
Hey, it takes a big person to say that you have questions, problems, issues, and I'm proud of you for, you know, taking this and taking your time and trying to work through issues.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And it'll be good. It'll be better.
You know, once you're done with your 40 days of, you know, being Jesus up in the mountain, mm-hmm. you know, then, yeah. you know, come back.
And, I have pushed the rock away. God, this is worse than ending on a dead baby story. I don't know where to go from here.
Just avoid the temptation of the devil. You'll be fine.
Yeah, if you come back in sandals and like a cloth shirt of some sort,
I'm wearing shoes. Sandals and a cloth shirt right now.
You got the long hair going on.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. Man, I think about cutting it. I want to cut it. I'll be honest with you. I know it's a part of my identity, but I get kind of sick of it. And so I suggested, especially like when I started working on the house, and I knew I was going to be wearing a lot of like Tyvek and I was going to be suited up a lot, and I knew it was going to play odd with my hair. And so I said, I went to Becky and I said, I'm thinking about cutting my hair. And
And
she was like, oh, that's okay. I think you need a trim. You could probably cut it to your shoulders or something like that. No, I'm like, no, I'm actually thinking maybe I'll cut it an inch long. And she started crying.
Oh, wow.
I can't cut my hair. Yeah. I want to cut my hair, but I can't cut my hair. So in lieu of cutting my hair, I want to get an implantable magnet. I really do.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Sure.
I've always kind of wanted
those
to do that.
Wear off after a couple of years.
You can, yeah, there's things you can do.
I mean, you can replace it occasionally.
Yeah, this is way worse than dead babies. I'm just gonna end it. Okay, is that all right?
Just don't come back with a T-necklace.
Okay, that's fine. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-753-7842. Our email address is questions@askanatheist.tv. Our Twitter is Ask an Atheist WA, I think, or something like that. I gotta get you access to the Twitter account. Yeah, I guess I'll see you guys probably in late September, early October. But, yeah, I'll see you guys then. And, Becky's at Camp Quest, so, you know, send your messages and be good to Becky.